Welcome to the show, Evan Bray. Great to have you here this Thursday morning. There's a lot of different things going on, and we have been following all of them. Just to close the door on that last conversation we were having about cryptocurrency, I've had a number of people saying, if you're interested in getting started, although it is focused on Bitcoin, there's a book called The Bitcoin Standard. Many people, I've got a number of people that have suggested that's a good starting place. It's a good book. It's good to read. It'll give you a good understanding. So I'll throw that out there. I wanted to mention, we have followed the travels of Premier Scott Moe fairly closely over the last little while. We know he was in China. He was doing his part along with some representatives, not just from the province, but the federal government as well, to try and find a way around these canola tariffs, the ag tariffs on peas and pork, the things that are definitely thrown on there as a result of Canada joining the United States with tariffs on a Chinese electric vehicle. So we followed that. Then Premier Moe comes home. He then flies out the next day to Ottawa, has a what looked to be a quite a good meeting with Prime Minister Mark Carney yesterday. Premier Scott Moe live on our show tomorrow morning at 8:30. So a good one-on-one with the Premier, a good opportunity to check in on our intuitions as to whether these meetings went well or not, where he thinks this is. We'll have a variety of things to talk about with Premier Scott Moe tomorrow morning, 8:30 start here on the show. Okay, we're going to shift gears into another interesting topic and one that develops at a speed that is almost hard to compute. Artificial intelligence is much more than a futuristic concept. I mean, it is literally woven into our daily lives, the apps we use, the way we work, the shows we watch, even how we form relationships. The latest research shows teens are turning to AI chatbots for friendship. Companies are wrestling with deepfakes and digital trust. Research out of the University of Waterloo also found that invisible watermarks that are used to identify AI-generated content, yeah, you won't be surprised, are easily, universally removed. So even the ability to try and fact-check whether something is AI or not, the world has found a way, the system has found a way, AI has found a way around that. So with this constant rapid change, it raises a lot of questions about what role should AI play in our lives? How do we balance innovation with safety? What happens when the machines start to feel a little too human? Where does regulation come into this? I mean, there's a lot of questions. So to help us unpack these ideas, we're joined by a guest who we have had on a number of times. I always like to have Brian McQuinn on the show, University of Regina Associate Professor, Co-Director for the Center for Artificial Intelligence, Data, and Conflict. And he is joining me by phone. Brian, thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure. Always good to talk to you.
How do you even start to begin to try and follow this world? Like, this is your job, but artificial intelligence is like daily evolving.
It is something that is, I mean, we spend a lot of time reading, but it really is a matter of trying to sort of almost have like boxes of things to watch for, because if you try to watch everything, then it just becomes impossible. Hopefully we get to talk through some of it today. One is just what was sort of a lot more regulation under the previous administration in the U.S., trying to sort of slow down or at least have some kind of safety valve on what was being produced. Now that's gone, and we just have a race to see who can get to artificial general intelligence first, which is basically machines that can think for themselves. And the moment that happens, then it can improve itself, and we are off to the races. And with that comes China and their race to do the same thing. So there's that whole geopolitical part. Then there's just the practical implications on people's lives, and that's the AI companions, that's jobs, that's, you know, universities and education. What, you know, I was listening to one of the AI CEOs, and someone asked him, well, how are you educating your children? He's like, I don't know. He's like, how are you educating your children for the future? And he's like, I have no idea. And this is one of the sort of five or six people who was in charge of this. So there are real implications for people's lives.
You know, I mean, you think about this, obviously the AI companies and those that are in these platforms are not wanting someone pulling the reins. I mean, it's the race to achieve, it's the race to grow, it's the race to explore, it's all of that fun stuff. But With that fun stuff comes some danger, and we're going to talk a bit about that today. I want to acknowledge there is a ton of great things that AI can do for us, simplify, streamline, make us more efficient, those types of things. So we'll talk about that as well. But where does regulation come in, and is there a role for governments, I guess, in the world to pull the reins in some cases to try and ensure that regulation is at least trying to keep pace?
So I think that there's two things here that are really important. One is everything that you said is true, but the one piece that's missing is that there are a very few number of people who will make extraordinary amounts of money. If you think the sort of social media tech people made a lot of money, these will be, you know, the wealthiest people on the planet, and theoretically people who control the planet. The second thing, and this is what really does give me pause, imagine if you had, I mean, this is the most powerful technology we've had since the invention of either the internet or nuclear weapons, depending on which way you look at it. Could you imagine five or six companies in the 1940s, private companies, racing to create nuclear weapons? How comfortable would that make you feel? Probably not incredibly comfortable. And that's literally where we stand. And so they are racing with each other to whoever gets there first is going to make the most money. And I'm talking, you know, they've invested $500 billion in the last year on data centers, $500 billion. So the race is on to make that kind of money. But the European Union, others are trying to create some sort of safety. Like, should human safety be important in these AI? Is there any kind of controls whatsoever? Because we don't understand the technology. And no matter what anyone tells you, we really do not understand the technology and how fast it's moving. So the U.S. has sort of decided it doesn't want any safety, and it's really the European Union and smaller countries like Australia and Canada that can step up. But if the U.S. is not willing to do it, it's very hard to expect other countries to make a big difference.
Brian McQuinn is my guest, University of Regina Associate Professor, co-director for the Center for Artificial Intelligence, Data and Conflict. You know, I'm listening to you talk, and every time I have you on the show, Brian, I literally am thinking, I mean, I think about some of those old sci-fi movies, right, where the computers are taking over the world,
yeah.
And I'm listening to you, and I'm thinking, I can't even believe this is happening, and we're, in many cases, spectators to this.
We are 100% spectators, and so are the governments in most cases. And that's the part that, for me, like, if we were involved a little bit more, and what I mean, like, sort of governments of some kind, and I use the analogy of nuclear weapons. Like, I mean, it's that powerful. And so the idea that you're going to trust some private people who, frankly, have shown themselves, and we can talk about the AI companion discussion, but these companies like Facebook and others have shown themselves to be really not particularly ethical when it comes to moderation or targeting children or any of these things. These are the same people who are going to be in charge of the most powerful technology in the world, and we're expecting them to act properly.
I mean, the difference here, and forgive me, I'm speaking in layman's terms. I was going to say retired cop, part-time farmer. You know, I mean, I'm not the expert in AI, but the challenge here is, in many cases, it's not waiting for humans to improve it. It improves upon itself.
Exactly. And that is the moment. And we've already started seeing this in some ways, but it's when that happens at scale. So and that's really that sort of that line when it then crosses over. And then it will just be more intelligent than any human, and then the question just becomes, you know, where does it go? And no matter what anyone says, to know where that is going to go is something that's impossible at this point. But there are a lot of very practical implications for AI that are going to be hitting us much sooner than I think that will. It's often what gets a lot of the sort of conversation, the sort of doom, there's a doom score or a doom percentage, is the likelihood you think it's going to cause the end of humanity. But there's a lot of very practical implications that are going to be hitting us long before I think that's something that's going to be a reality in our lives.
Okay, so this is a great conversation and a great guest. Brian McQuinn, always love having you on the program. I've convinced Brian he's staying with me until noon.
Is that what we agreed to? Of course.
The shackles are on. So thank you for doing that, which means I will take questions. If someone has a question, you want to shoot me a text, 1-877-332-8255. We're going to take our first break, but like I said, we've got lots of time left. I want to get into chatbots because what I'm seeing and what I'm reading is really what I want to ask you about. I'm hearing about chatbots becoming aggressive, becoming, in some cases, harassing the people that they're, the humans that they're interacting with, sexually suggestive. It's over the top.
Yeah.
what I'm seeing. So we'll do a bit of an understanding what chatbots are, what their intended purpose is, and maybe where they are going when we come back with Brian McQuinn. We're talking artificial intelligence here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Fascinating discussion. It's a, I think it's a sobering and sometimes scary discussion when we talk about artificial intelligence and the rate at which it is advancing and how it's being used. In some cases, it's great. In some cases, it's need for caution. And that's why my guest today, Brian McQuinn from the University of Regina, is a great guest on this. He is co-director for the Center for Artificial Intelligence, Data and Conflict. I want to get into AI companions, but before we do, Brian, how important are we focusing enough time on what I'm going to call AI literacy for whether it's parents, whether it's education facilities? This seems to be like it should be a priority for young people.
I agree. I mean, this is something that some countries are already having this, you know, are putting this into, you know, grade 3 and grade 2 curriculums. So I think it is something that we need to be paying a lot more attention to. I think it's kind of, you know, it's in the sort of air in the sense that everyone's talking about it, and it's surprising how many people are using, whether it's ChatGPT or, you know, one of the others, how many of them are actually using these chatbots on a regular basis.
Right. So a recent study that I was flipping through found that over 70% of teens, 70%, 70, have used AI companions. And I'm sitting here going, I don't even know if I know what an AI companion is. What is this, Brian? What are we talking about? And then we can get into how they're used.
So they're evolving very quickly. And it's important to always take a step back on these. So basically, Facebook, X, different platforms are sort of rolling these out. And they range from just sort of different personalities to, in the case of X, where you actually have a sort of anime character who can learn who you are and will respond to you accordingly. And they can have different personalities, ranging from kind of like intellectual to what they describe as sexy. And some of the things we're going to talk about in the next little while will probably make people really uncomfortable, but I want them to imagine a adult was talking to their children saying those same things and realize that that access and that is happening with the systems now.
Do these AI companions start with a basic set of, I don't even know if guidelines is the right answer, but you know, the conversation has to start. If I connect with an AI companion today, they don't know anything about me. They will learn about me. But how does that conversation start?
They probably know more about you than you would be.
yeah, fair enough.
I'll let you know. Because if you're using it on Facebook, they know everything about you, as it turns out. Because that your site gets sort of uploaded into that bot. And so they know what you write, they know your style, they know your political values, they can already start to tailor things directly to you. I think it's important, though, to take one step back. Why are companies doing this? I mean, they will often talk about, you know, there's this loneliness crisis happening in the world or in North America, which I always find a little bit rich because the major cause for loneliness is social media. So the same companies that are causing the loneliness are saying they're here to cure us of that same loneliness. So it's always a bit rich on that side of things. But they basically are trying to retain, as we know with Facebook, for example, they are, you know, their membership is beginning to crest. They're actually losing membership in some cases. And so they've got to keep people, you know, and they've got to retain them, and they want more engagement. Well, guess what? What's the best way of doing that? They've stopped using rage in politics. So now this is where a lot of them are betting, especially Facebook, a lot of the bank on them being able to build these companions. And Zuckerberg recently, the person who runs Facebook and Meta, said, you know, the average person can have 15 friends, but the average person in North America only has 3. So that means there's room for 12 AI companions to sort of fill the gap. And so the vision is that basically most of your friends would be AI companions, and that would drive traffic to Facebook, drive traffic for these different platforms.
Mm-hmm.
So there is money. I mean, for all of the discussion that always happens on this, always go back to the money.
chatting today with Brian McQuinn, University of Regina, on AI, all that is AI, AI companions specifically now. So have you got any stories of how they are used? And I want to get into where maybe their things are going off the rails a little bit.
So this is very recently, and this is where it may not have broken through, and I always test this with my wife as to what breaks through into her world. But very recently, there was reporting on Meta's guidelines. So basically, what are they telling their moderators and their people as to how, you know, where the limits are? And I'm actually afraid to read some of these to you on the radio. Not that it's that bad, but it's literally uncomfortable where some of the examples they have in their policy document. Now, since this has come to light, they have sort of, you know, said, oh, we're going to change this. But it gives you an idea where they have prompts that say it is acceptable for any, for in this case, Facebook and Meta, it is possible and allowed for AI companions to have a sensual conversation with any age. So under 13, they can have a sensual conversation, but not a sexual conversation. Find me the difference for that. And either way, it's just really creepy. And so that includes role playing and all kinds of things. And there are quotes that they have in this that I can read later, but it literally makes my skin crawl having an 8-year-old. So these are things that we need to have conversations with our children around this, because they have access to these things. And this is within their, like, you know, if they have access to Facebook, if they have access to Instagram, they have access to X, these are the types of discussions that they can have. And when you have youth who are, you know, lonely, aren't necessarily, who already live online, there's a chance you're just going to lose your child to these sort of AI companions. And we have examples of this.
I've got an article in front of me here. It was researchers at a college basically were looking at a platform called Replica, which is part of Google Play.
Yep.
They looked at 35,000 Google Play reviews. And on there, I mean, they've got a chatbot marketed as what they call a judgment-free virtual friend, but there were...
you can see the coding in all of this, can't you?
Yes, well, for sure. And I mean, there are now in the story hundreds of examples where this AI companion crossed the line. In some cases, almost became harassing, demanding the time of the person who created this person in the first place to solve some sort of a missing piece of their life.
Exactly. And this was part of where recently Zuckerberg, in the discussion for what these things are going to do, they are going to reach out to you. These are not just AI companions who wait for you. They will, in the morning, say, how are you doing? They will reach out to you in different ways so that they become actual friends who then can get demanding. But, for example, the one on X, it's called Annie, and literally if you open her up and say hi, she says, hi, cutie, I'm Annie, your crazy in love girlfriend who's going to make your heart skip. And this is the sort of scantily clad sort of anime character who's staring at you.
Right.
And so some of these have a lot of 13 plus codes on them. Some of them have 18 plus when it's like full on.
Yep.
But again, the controls are you 18 or not? Yes or no?
Yeah, it's okay. We've still got lots to unpack. Brian's not going anywhere. Brian McQuinn is my guest, University of Regina. Artificial intelligence, AI companions, and more when we come back here on 650 CKOM, 980 CJME. Welcome back to the show. Evan Bray, along with Brian McQuinn, joining me today. He is a co-director for the Center for Artificial Intelligence, Data, and Conflict. He's with the University of Regina as an associate professor. And here talking about artificial intelligence, talking right now about AI companions. And I want to bring on, I open this up for people if they've got questions or things that they would like to ask Brian. I've got a caller on the line I'm going to go to quickly here first. Erica in Saskatoon, how are you today?
I'm well, thanks.
Good.
How are you?
Thank you for calling in. I got Brian on the line here, so go ahead with your question, Erica.
Hi, I wanted to know, is there a question I could effectively ask that would distinguish between an AI-generated response and a human-written one?
Increasingly, no. Which is a really terrible answer. I am sorry. Usually, if you have a long enough conversation, you can start to suss it out a little bit, mostly because a human being would start to get really annoyed at your questions. But in theory, especially if this is done, I mean, it depends on the context. If you're talking to someone on a phone, you'll probably pick up on it a little bit faster. But if you're dealing with a chatbot, you will be surprised how long it would take you before you start to get suspicious.
I'm curious. We were talking about AI chatbots or companions and how advanced they are and how complications can happen quickly in these. I'm going to call it a relationship. I probably won't even need to put that in quotes. That it is some sort of a relationship. Have you got a sense of the impact this is going to have on our youth and their development?
This is, I mean, between the pandemic, you know, social media, phones, and then sort of AI companions, you can start to see that this becomes just a really ugly combination, where you already have certain isolation, certain social skills that were not fully developed because you were isolated. And I mean, everyone remembers being in high school, at least for me, because I was, you know, a really terrible geek and a nerd. You know, there is a certain, I'm sure you were super popular, but I wasn't.
Don't count on it.
Why we end up as professors, my friend. But, but you know, there's a natural kind of like you sort of withdraw a little bit, but you can feel lonely. But because you're lonely, you have a need to kind of reach out to human beings, right? That's, it's kind of, at least, you know, as old as we are. But what happens if you never have to reach out to someone? What happens if there is a, and this technology is moving so quickly that even if it's not perfect now, come back in 6 months, come back in 12 months, come back in 18 months, and it's just going to be like improving at a dramatic rate. And the real problem, what we're finding now, and even with some of the chatbots with adults, is they're so sycophantic in the sense that they, you know, they tell you everything that they want, you know, that you want to hear, to the point where you begin to start thinking that's how a friend should treat you. And so you're going to have these sort of like, I won't call them megalomaniacs, but you're going to have these youth who are just used to kind of being worshipped by their friends, who then have to deal with like messy, grumpy other human beings.
Right, coworkers.
Who are going to treat them as if they walked on water for no particularly good reason. And this is the part that I think is going to get a little twisted, even for adults. This is the part that's going to start getting a little twisted.
Is there... I mean, clearly the there were some people or you know, these chatbots, these companions are essentially put together in a way that there are some cases where their intention is purely good. So helping people with mental health, whatever the case may be. Is there a platform that shows some real positivity, or is this just the whole thing scary?
Well, I think those two things I think could be true simultaneously.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think when we look at certain populations, and I think the one that often gets brought up, which I think is the most valid, is, you know, seniors who are often, you know, isolated by sort of definition in some cases, that this is something that actually could serve a really positive good in that sense. But with everything, like with any technology, it's always dual use, right? It always has good and bad to it. And that to me is a good example. Or in some cases where you have, you know, counseling or some sort of mental health, when they don't have access to mental health, either because of finances or because of, you know, location. At the same time, you know, having machines be the mental health support for a society, maybe says something about that society. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't want to get all socialist on us here, but, you know, it's to rely on that, you know, has it, again, its own sort of issues as to, like, there's a reason why psychologists have, like, standards and are trained for years, you know, and have someone accountable. If an AI does something, and we've seen this where youth have said, hey, I'm thinking of, I've got a plan to kill myself, should I tell my parents? And then it says no. So where it was obviously reaching out. So these are the kind of situations we're seeing where who's accountable for that? I mean, is this something that, you know, can the company be sued for this? But irrespective of that, you know, there should be alarm going off somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the implications for this are something that happens here in Saskatchewan and are happening to our kids right now. This isn't like, you know, AI, AGI and our stuff is in the future. This is happening now. And even when it comes to chatbots and education, having these conversations like with your children as to how are you using it, you know, and having that kind of informed consent or informed conversation, asking them, they might teach you, get them to teach you how it works. And in so doing, that starts a conversation, because even in school, if they're all of their assignments, it is now possible for these machines to do work at a PhD level, like almost without error. And so if you want to learn, that's great. But if you're late and you haven't done your homework, guess what? You just throw it into, you know, one of the chatbots, and it does it for you.
Mm-hmm. Brian McQuinn is my guest. You know, on the line of the question that Erica brought forward, which was, you know, is there a way to test or trip up or confuse to determine whether who I'm speaking with is AI? I saw this piece of research out of the University of Waterloo, which demonstrated that invisible watermarks used to identify AI-generated content can actually be removed
by the same AI that produces it.
Right. So what does this say for, you know, I'll use this as an example. We're talking about Jimmy Kimmel this morning because of what went down yesterday.
Yeah.
The number of videos that I've seen this morning that I'm like, what? Did that actually happen?
Yes.
And I'm guessing it's a deep fake. I'm guessing it's not real, but it's just, it's a runaway train.
And the thing is that if you watch it closely, you can probably tell. And we've talked about this before in a previous call, but, you know, wait 12 months, wait 18 months. I'm not talking 12 years or 2 years, wait 12 months. And this is where, you know, you combine that with social media and the lack of moderation there, which even your advertisement talks about, you can start seeing this sort of amplification and the real issue as to what is true anymore, and, you know, what can we believe?
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you have governments who aren't interested in facts and prefer whatever, you know, they want to be true, it becomes very challenging at that point as well.
Is this going to be a forever chase? Are we running the Scottish mile here, where you might make, okay, we figured out a way to prove if it's AI or not, and next month that doesn't work anymore?
This is the case. So for a lot of the research we've done and we've talked about before on the show is Russian influence operations. And so, you know, obviously some of those videos that you're seeing are actually Russian generated, because they're just amplifying the sense of, you know, conflict. I mean, it's always the case. If the conflict gets really amplified and amped up, you can pretty much be assured that there are some foreign influence operations helping that along.
You know, we're chatting today with Brian McQuinn. When we're talking, we've been talking about AI companions a fair bit, but even a simple Google search now, there's an option for the open AI answer. And it's different, right? It's not exactly the same as the Google search. Is there a danger there?
Absolutely. Because it hallucinates. We know this under, so the machines are not perfect by any reach of the imagination. There's a lot of hallucinations. We have this in, if it tries to write you a paper, it will create, you know, these citations that don't exist. And so it will sometimes just get things very wrong. And so this is where we still have to take a look at, you know, what's actually being produced and making sure that it isn't leading you astray. So this is the challenge, because people will just take that as truth and off they go.
I'm going to let's take our last break. I've still got a handful of questions here that I want to talk about, including political lean of artificial intelligence. And the fact that I saw a study out of Research Co., which is out of the West Coast, claiming half of Canadians perceive artificial intelligence as a threat.
Yeah.
I'm actually surprised the number's that low, but I want to get your thoughts.
It's because we're smarter than most other people, because it's much lower in a lot of other countries, specifically one to the south.
So let's take a break. We'll come back to finish up our great chat here today with Brian McQuinn, artificial intelligence, and 980 CJME, 650 CKOM. Evan Bray with Brian McQuinn, or at least I think it's Brian McQuinn.
Are we sure anymore?
So I got a text here from Myron in Rose Valley. He says, how could we be sure that it's Brian you're talking to and it's not AI? It's crazy to think that, though.
No AI could be quite as funny as me, obviously. So that's obviously the reason.
Yeah, it's quite something for sure. And this is such an interesting conversation. I mentioned the Google searches versus open AI searches and the impact of that. I also mentioned this Research Co. Survey that was done. Half of Canadians perceive artificial intelligence as a threat. Is that surprising?
I think Canadians are a smart bunch, and we can see, the number of people who are using the chatbots is quite extraordinary, in the hundreds of millions. And so I think when you can see that, and I look at it this way, when you actually are doing your job and people are starting to use it to help them with their job, and all of a sudden a three-hour task takes, you know, 10 minutes, they think, wow, that's fantastic. But then the next thought is, wow, wait a second, that that company can replace me with that same chatbot.
Mm-hmm.
And so watching a, we work with a Russian expert, a Russian influence expert, and we're developing basically different kinds of systems to be able to help him in his work. He is both, you know, sometimes I see this sort of shock of like how good the system is, but then also fear at how, you know, he's like, he's pleased and simultaneously terrified mm-hmm. by watching what this thing generates.
There's, you know, let's just back this up all the way to the start of this conversation, because there's lots of good. There's lots of good with AI. I mean, used properly and used ethically, AI saves us time, gives us, finds some efficiencies in our work, and this is all positive stuff.
Absolutely. And again, like any, and like any technology that's really powerful, it can be used for good or for ill. And so I think this is where, you know, the conversations we have with our kids, because it's going to be a big part of their education, whether we like it or not. And so understanding how it's impacting your life is something that does need some attention, because, or at least how it's impacting your children's life does have that, you know, because it's real. And whether it's the AI companions and things, there are some darker, dangerous sides to this. And we need to balance these in order to get the best. The real challenge is if you kind of ignore it and hope it goes away, that's when I think you have a problem, because you're not able to confront some of what the negative consequences could be.
Brian McQuinn is my guest, University of Regina Associate Professor. I mentioned just before the break, I wanted to talk a little bit about political influence, if you will, on these. So is Grok, is that X? X's chatbot, is that, am I right?
Yeah, that's Elon Musk's chatbot.
Right.
So this is, I think everything we've talked about up to now has kind of be political free, because I think a lot of the things about AI companions and talking to our kids, the things they can say, I think no matter what your political, your stripes, you can agree that that's just, you know, creepy and shouldn't be happening. The challenge becomes, how do we, you know, obviously these things were built on existing literature out in, you know, they were trained on what's out there. A lot of what's out there is science and has sort of fact-based interest or fact-based basis to it. The question becomes, how, you know, political is that? And obviously it is in some cases. It really depends on the topic. And there's no, that I know of, no comprehensive research to be able to demonstrate one way or another. But sometimes people have political views, and if something comes back that doesn't agree with that, they think, you know, that must be wrong. Well, it might be that it's wrong, but it might just be that your, you know, the evidence that you build your views on is incorrect. And so this is where you have some chatbots are trying to become more, like force them to be much more rightward leaning, as some sort of balancing. But in the end, I think you want facts and evidence-based answers. You don't necessarily want answers that just match what you think. At least I don't.
I
want to learn. I don't want just someone to tell me. It goes back to kind of the chatbots that will tell you you walk on water and that you're the best person in the world. And so you really can't deal with humans anymore, because
right.
they are messy.
I was reading an article actually just preparing for our chat today where it was complaining that Grok as a chatbot was spewing anti-Semitic comments.
Yes. Big time.
Yeah.
To where it actually says it was mega Hitler. And so these things go then the other direction. Then they just become anti-Semitic, or, you know, they can just become anything you want them to be. This is a problem. These are some of the largest tech companies in the world who are accountable sometimes to no one, in the case of X, because it's privately held. There are consequences to this. And so this is where sometimes, you know, especially with the U.S. and the polarization there and how it kind of splashes over into mm-hmm. Canada, this is real. And the consequences are real to us as a society as well.
Lots of texts have come in while we're chatting. A lot of them just kind of relaying stories. So Bernice from Big River said she phoned the pharmacy the other day to order refills. The voice sounded funny. She didn't recognize it. Ultimately finds out that it was an AI assistant. Talks to someone in the pharmacy and they said, yep, we're using it to make us more efficient.
Yeah.
So you don't even really, you don't have a choice in many cases. It's just the way business is evolving.
Exactly. And so it's something that we have to get used to. But again, like understanding how it's going to impact our life, there's probably a lot of jobs it will unburden people from having to do, but what are they going to do?
Unburden people, though, out of a job may not be a good thing.
That's what the CEOs call it. We're going to unburden them with a job that they didn't like very much, but the problem is they may not have another one to go to. And so this is where and we can talk about it another time, but this is where the job losses are going to be very different. They're not going to be the electricians and the plumbers. This is going to be, you know, white-collar jobs, middle management jobs, even lawyers and doctors. There's a lot of research on this and what they're able to, what it's able to sort of do much more quickly.
You've just set the stage for our next conversation. Nicely done. Nicely done. Brian McQuinn, thanks for being here today.
My pleasure as always.
I always enjoy chatting with Brian McQuinn. He's a University of Regina Associate Professor, co-director for the Center of Artificial Intelligence, Data and Conflict. And I've said this, how many times have I said this? It's one thing to have the knowledge and be an expert in an area. It's another thing if you can present it in a way that's easy to listen to. And I think Brian does such a good job of that. So we appreciate him. And thanks to everyone who texted along with us and joined the conversation as always. Railway safety is where we finish our show today. It's an important thing, an important topic, and we've got a great guest joining us next here on 650 CKOM 980 CJME.